It's good to be here this morning. It's good to see each and every one of you, and I appreciate so much the words that the very few words that Brother Don brought to us. You could have went on quite a bit further. And one thing, as he was closing, he was talking about that meeting where this preacher preached that wonderful message on grace, and the person couldn't remember who preached it. Well, there's another part of that that's part of human nature also, that there was a preacher there that really messed up, that wasn't blessed at all, and people don't forget his name. So I hope when we leave here today that you don't remember my name, you know, because people don't forget the mess ups and all the horrible things. The Lord would bless us for a little while this morning. I'd like to bring to you part of the message that we have in the Lord that we refer to as a Sermon on the Mount. I'd like to go to Matthew chapter 7. Sermon on the Mount is contained in Matthew 5, 6, and 7. So here in chapter 7, we're getting to the close to the end of this Sermon on the Mount. And in verse 12 of chapter 7, there are some words that we're all familiar with, and we were probably all familiar with them before we even knew they was from the Bible. Chapter 7 of Matthew, verse 12 says, "Therefore," now this tells us that we're finishing up something. And this "therefore" tells us that this verse is the conclusion of the first 11 verses of chapter 7. And Lord willing, that's what we're going to look at this morning. But chapter 12 says, "Therefore," because of what's gone on before, "therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them." Now, we've all heard that all our lives, haven't we? We call it, and when I was in school, I learned the golden rule, and that's what it was. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, when I got into the business world, I found out in the business world, the actual golden rule in the business world is whoever has the gold makes the rules. Now, but biblically, here's the one. Oh, and by the way, if you really want to know, God owns all the gold anyhow. He still gets to make the rules. He just lets us use it for a little while, and we think it's ours, but it's actually his. Now, whatsoever that you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. What a wonderful thought that is. We all realize how great that thought is. But it's difficult, isn't it, to put in place. You know, he ends this verse by saying, and this is the Lord speaking, one of all wisdom. He says, "For this is the law and the prophets." Now, if you go back over to Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 18, where I believe the Lord was talking about, he said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." Is that hard to do? To love your neighbor as yourself? And that's what this golden rule is all about, is loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, let's go back to the beginning. Now, this is the conclusion of it. This is where we're going to end up here after a while, Lord willing. We're going to end up right back here in verse 12. But let's go back to the beginning of this chapter so that we can see how we get to this point and why, or what the Lord does to get to this point in the Sermon on the Mount. He begins chapter 7 by saying, "Judge not." And let me stop right there. Judge not. This perhaps is a verse or a phrase that has been used out of context more than just about any verse there is in the Scriptures. Now, there's a few of them that's probably right up there with it. But this verse is commonly used. In fact, I would say 90% of the time I've heard people refer to this verse, it's used out of context. Now, I know there may be some of you here saying, "Why do you preachers keep talking about context?" Because it's important. It's vitally important. Let me give you an example of how important context is. One of the vehicles that I drive, I'm making monthly payments on it. I've got it about half paid for. And in the contract that I signed, there's a phrase in there that says that the loan company can demand full payment And if I don't make it full payment immediately, they'll take my car back. That's in my contract. Now, if they showed up at my door in the morning and said, you give us a check for this $15,000 to finish paying for your vehicle, or we're taking it with us right now, I would object. You know why? Because they're taking that phrase, that statement out of that contract, out of context. That particular statement is down in a paragraph that only deals if I quit making payments on it. And I'm way behind on my payments. They have the right to do that. See, they were taking it out of context. Now, wouldn't you think that would be very important for, you know, they could do that to your house, to your car, whatever it is. I mean, we could look at a whole variety of contracts, the importance of taking things in their context. And in the scriptures, it's vitally important for us to understand the context, not only in this chapter, but in the context of the book and in the context of the Bible as a whole. So let me show you how important it is to understand context. Because if you don't understand context, you're going to be like the old feller said one time, if you don't take things in context, you're going to be as confused as a termite in a yo-yo. I mean, you're not going to know which side's up. Now, it says, judge not. Now, let's see if this will hold up. If we're just going to make this blanket statement without any context at all, when it says, judge not, let's see if that's going to hold up. Let's just stay close to home. Let's stay here in chapter 7, and let's look down in verse 6. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine. You know, there are some wonderful things we have in God's Word. There are some wonderful things in God's kingdom. There's some wonderful things in God's church, the wonderful truths that we have. And here we have an admonition not to give it to the dogs, not to give it to the swine. They'll trample it under. And I could take a lot of time explaining that, but here's the point I want. Who are the dogs? Who's the swine? Well, it's this person does this, this, or this. You know what? You just judged, didn't you? For us to determine who's a dog and who's a swine, you have to judge. What about verse 15? Beware of false prophets. Any judgment required there to determine who is a false prophet? Now, it ought to be real easy. Now, y'all don't laugh when I say this, but it ought to be real easy to determine who's a false prophet. If they disagree with me, they're a false prophet. Okay? Now, that's not totally true, but I hope it's fairly close. Now, because I hope I'm contending for the truth. I'm seeking the truth. But we have to make a determination about that, don't we? Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Let's look at some things over there where it talks about the need of judgment. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints? Do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, ye are unworthy. Are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Now here it says the saints are going to judge. Now there's a lot of discussion and a lot of ideas about how it is that we as saints are going to be judging the world. But the point is here, we're going to be judges, aren't we? We're going to be judges. We can go back to chapter 5 of 1 Corinthians. And it says in verse 6 that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Verse 7 is purge out the old leaven. Isn't judgment needed there? Stay in that same chapter, down to the end of that chapter, verse 13. It says, therefore, put away from among yourselves that wicked person. Isn't judgment required to know who that wicked person is? We could go to Titus chapter 3 and verse 10. A heretic after the first and second admonition reject. Lots of judgment required there, isn't it? We could go over to Romans 16, verse 17, I believe it is. And we'll read over there where it says, mark those that have those offenses that are contrary to the doctrine. How are we going to do that? We have to make a judgment about what they're teaching and what they're doing. And then we could go to Matthew chapter 18. We're all familiar with that, about the discipline of the church. You know, if a brother, you know, if they have a fault between two brothers, the brother's supposed to go by himself first. If that doesn't work, take it to two other brethren with him and go talk to that brother that's in the fault. If he doesn't hear them, take it to the church. Sounds to me like a lot of judgment's been used. So we are commanded in several places as individuals and as a church to exercise judgment. Well, then why did the Lord tell us in chapter 7 and verse 1 of Matthew here in the Sermon on the Mount to judge not? Well, here's a couple of keys. Let me give you the first key. I think the first key is found in John chapter 7 and verse 24. If you go over to John chapter 7, you're going to read there about a righteous judgment. All right? All these judgments that we've been talking about, if we went through Corinthians and Romans and Titus, all of those judgments that we're told that we are to do are righteous judgments. And Lord willing, we're going to get to that here in a little bit of what a righteous judgment is. But we're to have a righteous judgment. What the Lord here is saying is judge not unrighteously. Now the Lord's making that statement, and then he's going to give us three reasons that we're not to judge unrighteously. Let's look at those three reasons and three problems that we have if we try to judge unrighteously. The first one's right here in this first verse. Judge not that you be not judged. Now, let me add something to this verse also to help us in our understanding of it. The context will prove it out. Judge not that you be not judged by God. Anybody here want to be judged by God? You might can fool me. You might can fool these brethren and sisters of this church here, but we can't fool God. Not only does God know all the facts about what we did and what we said, you know what the Lord knows? What our thoughts and intents of our heart was. Anybody up for that kind of judgment yet? I don't think I want that kind of judgment. I don't think I want to be judged by God that severely. If we have unrighteous judgment, the first thing is that we'll be judged by God. You know, there's a verse over in Proverbs, and I wish I could remember where it was. I've read it a number of times, about oppressing the poor and the fathers. I can't remember exactly the terms in it, but it says that, remember, the Lord is their advocate. You know, you're trying to make judgment against somebody, just remember that person might have God's on their side. that's kind of scary, doesn't it? Now, first reason not to judge unrighteously is because that God will judge you. Then reason number two is in verse 2. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet it, it shall be measured to you again. Now this same thought is repeated in other places in the scriptures. How many times have we as hypocrites, and I'll use that term, I hate to speak ugly about you, but that might be the truth, and I'm going to prove here in a moment that's some of those words from the Lord, not from me. How many times have we made a judgment using a certain standard And then later, we got judged by that same standard. Now, we could all relate cases where we know somebody, whether it's friends or coworkers or people in school or people we deal with in the business world, that they treated somebody a certain way, mistreated somebody a certain way, and then later they got treated exactly the same way by somebody else. So that's our second reason for not treating somebody unjustly. Now let's look at the third reason, beginning in verse 3. Let's read about three verses here. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite. See, I told you the Lord said it. Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Now, those terms, the mote and the beam, for a good way to understand that and illustrate it, your brother has a speck of dust in his eye. I've got a tube before in my eye, okay? And I'm telling him, get that stinking piece of dust out of your eye. Now, that'd be kind of stupid, wouldn't it, to say something like that? And it says here, we should get out that beam out of our own eye before we can talk to our brother about his problems. Now, we're getting into some difficult territory here. You may not realize the problems that we just stepped into. If we are going to judge righteously, we have got to have that beam out of our eye, don't we? And the smaller beam. And the mote even out of our own eye. You see, we're going to have to get down to a pretty good point, aren't we? We're going to have to get to a point of not having anything that would call us a hypocrite. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm going to talk about me. I could talk about some of you here that I know pretty well, but I won't. I'll be nice. I know I'm a hypocrite because I am not perfect in God's eyes. I have sin in my life. I know there's inconsistencies from time to time in my life. I know we have all of those things, and I know all of you do too. So we're not perfect, are we? You know one of the reasons that we can't have righteous judgment is because we can't. We can't. Because we have that beam in our own eye. We have sin in ourselves. If we had that sin in our own eyes, how are we ever going to be able to judge righteously? That sounds like a problem, doesn't it? How are we going to judge if we have that sin in our own lives? Well, there's a couple of verses here that some people think are just thrown in there by accident, that they don't relate it to the rest of this passage. But I think they do. We have a desire to judge righteous judgment, to live as the Lord would have us to live, but we're sinners. How can we get to that point of being able to rend righteous judgment? Look at verse 7. Ask, and it must be given unto you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Now, people think this is just kind of stuck in here, just as kind of a parentheses or something else. I think it's part of the Lord's teaching on judging. If we're going to have righteous judgment, we need God's help. We can't do it of our own fallen selves. We're totally depraved. And you know what else? You know, I hope nobody got mad at me when I called you a hypocrite a while ago. But let me, if you're not mad at me for saying that, let me say something else. You're evil. Have I got anybody's attention yet? Anybody mad at me yet? Anybody upset at me for saying that yet? I'm just reading scriptures. I mean, verse 11 right here says, if ye then being evil, I'm just reading. I'm not rendering judgment yet. Just reading the scriptures. But what the Lord said, seek, ye shall find. Him that knocketh, it shall be opened. And he gives the illustration in verse 9. He said, and what man of theirs, if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then being evil. You know what the Lord just told us? We're all totally depraved. Depravity's in our heart. Now he's talking to us. He's talking to the church. Now, if you go back to the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount and you look at Matthew chapter 5, you know, you remember all those words, blessed are they that mourn, blessed are they that do hunger and thirst after righteousness, blessed, you know, all those of the Beatitudes. He was talking to us. He's telling, this is marks of the children of God. And he's still talking to us. And he said, you're evil. You're hypocrites. I didn't get any amens on that. But, you know, I probably should have, because it's the truth, isn't it? Now, we don't like to admit it. If then we are hypocrites, if then that we are evil and we're totally depraved, how can we ever have righteous judgment and be not judged by God? Let's continue on here in verse 11. He said, if ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? I think you would be amazed at the good things that our Heavenly Father wants to give to us, but he don't for one simple reason. We don't ask, and we don't seek it. If we're walking in God's way, seeking his will for our lives, God has a whole bunch of blessings just waiting for us. All we have to do is ask. All we have to do is seek. All we have to do is knock. Make that request known that, Lord, we want to render righteous judgment. Now, some people have said that all this judgment that we're talking about here in the scriptures, here, especially here in this passage, this judging is just a matter of judging by example. And there is a way that we can judge by example. You know, if we live our life in a holy and righteous way, say in my workplace I'm living my life in a way that I should, and I'm giving a good example to those that I work with, I'm judging the bad things that they say and the bad things that they do. There is a judgment to that. There is a judgment by example. But this passage goes further than that. Let's talk for a moment now about righteous judgment. We've already seen this unrighteous judgment, that the judgment as a hypocrite, that we're judging somebody when we ought to judge, we're judging somebody just to be critical, just to be mean and ugly. Anybody here ever guilty of that? I didn't think so. I'm not going to look just in case somebody raised their hand. Now, unrighteous judgment is that hypocritical, wanting to criticize, wanting to demean somebody, wanting to demote somebody. But now let's look at some righteous judgment. Let's go to Romans chapter 14. And we're going to find out a little bit about this righteous judgment. Romans 14, beginning verse 10. Said, but why dost thou judge thy brother? Or why dost thou set it not thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. We've heard something like that already from Matthew 7, haven't we? For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then every one of us shall give an account to himself of God. Now pay attention to verse 13. This is where I'm going with righteous judgment. Let us not therefore judge one another anymore, unrighteous judgment, but judge this rather, righteous judgment. Here's the righteous judgment. But judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. I hope you begin to see the second key to the understanding of this verse, judge not. Here is a glimpse of righteous judgment. If you judge somebody to take them down, to criticize them, to put them down so you can be higher than them, to do something to damage them or to hurt them, or merely to criticize, that's unrighteous judgment. If you're criticizing somebody and it's going to be a stumbling block to them, it's going to cause them to fall and go into more sin, that's unrighteous judgment. You know what righteous judgment is? It's judgment where we're going to help somebody. And we're going to help them become a better follower of God, a better church member, a better person. You know, we have that statement over in Galatians chapter 6, and this is would be, I think, a good end of that righteous judgment. If we do indeed have righteous judgment, we're going to end like Galatians chapter 1, where it says, I know what it says, but I'm going to read it. If a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one the spirit of meekness. It's for restoration and for building up of somebody. Let me give you an example. Let's say at my place of business, there's three of us that are in a position that I am as a manager. And let's say a position became available where we could move up. And I go to the boss and I begin to criticize the other two and tell him all the bad things that those people have been doing that's not in the best interest of the company. Why have I judged them wrong in their actions? To put them down. All right? Now, why would I want to put them down? So I could be built up. I'm not helping them, I'm helping me. Now, on the other hand, let's say that this position became available, and I saw one of these other two that was vying for that same position that I was, that was doing something wrong. And I went to that person and I said, and using judgment said, friend, you're doing this wrong. You need to do this way. You need to get right and do it the proper way. Now, if I did that, because he's doing things right now, maybe some other things he's doing better than me, he might get that promotion. Who am I helping? I'm helping him rather than me. Now, when you get back to Matthew chapter 7, let's get back now to where we started out with. Verse 12. We're going to have righteous judgment. Helping one another, forgiving one another, lifting one another up. That's righteous judgment. and now we come back. Therefore, because we understand now the problems with unrighteous judgment, because we understand what righteous judgment is, because we know we can't do it ourselves, we have to have God's help. Then he closes this section of the Sermon on the Mount. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men would do unto you, do ye even so to them. And again, as the law and the prophets said, love your neighbor as yourself. If we're going to judge righteous judgment, we've got to love one another. We may disagree, we may have difficulties, but we got to love one another. Love one another, not a little bit, not just a fair amount, but we've got to love one another just as much as we love ourselves. This is what the Lord is teaching us. Let's be thankful for God's teaching. Let's try to love one another in that way. And let us be thankful to God that He loves us in that great manner also. May God bless you.